Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's May 11, 2020, live to be rebroadcast May 13, 2020. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. Hey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine while live, you can comment below on Facebook Live. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Don't forget to do the five, wash your hands often, cough into your elbow, don't touch your face, physically distance at least 6 feet apart, and stay home when you can. Go out only for essentials if you must, and if you can stay home, that's better. You can go out and get exercise and go outside. In fact, it's a good idea to get out for exercise and be outdoors when it's possible, of course, with proper physical distancing. All right. So here, something that might be a little bit light. I've heard some criticism of people who are wearing masks while alone in their cars. So people are saying, why is it necessary to wear a mask if you're by yourself and you're in your own car?
That's funny. I've seen that.
But you've seen why people are questioning, or have you seen people driving alone in their car?
No, I've seen people driving around in their cars with their masks on.
Well, here's why. Okay. My first question about that question is, could you spend that thought noticing a pretty flower, how many leaves have come out on the trees? Why are you getting so upset about that? It's kind of a silly thing to be upset about, don't you think? All right? It's kind of a waste of your brain energy, what little we may have these days. But by way of explanation, here it is, because I'm one of those people you'll see driving with a mask on in my car. It's not because, oh my God, I'm afraid I'm going to get coronavirus in my car. That's not why. This is why. If I have a short 2-mile trip from my house to the post office and then another 1/2-mile trip to the office, I might choose to don my mask at home so I don't have to stop to put it on before getting out to the post office. It's just practical. Does it make a difference if I put it on at home or at the post office when it's going to be on my face for an extra 5 minutes? So what? Then I need to be masked when I get to the office, so why bother taking it off? However, on my 30-mile trip to Glastonbury, I'm going to leave the mask off in the car and laugh along with my friends Ophira Eisenberg and Bill Curtis, okay? You know, because I like to listen to Ask Me Another and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Right.
And by the way, did you know you could listen to those shows on podcast and you could stream them so you could stop them and start them? And that's what I do. I don't listen to them in real time. I listen to them at other times so I get to listen to the whole thing. It's great. So when I get to my destination, I'll put my mask on when I get there if it's a long trip. Some people may just be thinking, I'm going out, so I just want to have it on the whole time. Many are probably taking a short hop to the grocery or hardware store. Some, no doubt, see it as a fashion statement because masks are getting pretty funky these days. And I think that's a great thing. My opinion is it's not a big deal when you put it on as long as it's on for the mandated situations. If you're in a public space where it's harder to physically distance, so don it when you like and learn how to smize.
Smize.
You know what smize is?
No.
Smile with your eyes.
Oh, smiling with your eyes.
Yeah. Can you tell that I'm smiling? It's like you put your mask on. Can you tell that I'm smiling?
I tell people I'm smiling under here.
I'm smiling under here.
I'm smiling under here.
Yes.
I may have my tongue stuck out just for fun, but
yeah.
I'm smiling.
So smize was coined by Tyra Banks, you know, America's Top Model. Yeah. So that's who coined the smize term. So, you know, not such a big deal. We have to wear masks. It's mandated. You know, the idea is that you're going to cover your droplets and you're going to make it so your droplets don't get on other people. Because not everybody is tested, we don't know who has and doesn't have the coronavirus because you can be asymptomatic and have it. So we have to wear masks, and we have to wear masks in public. And fortunately, we're having some fun with the masks. People are getting silly things on the mask. My friend Bruce has a picture of Guy Fawkes on his. And you have a picture of from races and scary bike riding people and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a sarong that's been turned into a mask. And I've got, you know, gingham and pretty flowers and strawberries and cool stuff like that. So, you know, it's all right. The other thing that I'm doing, I don't know how this is going to work in the summer, but I've been making use of a neck gaiter. And neck gaiters are super versatile. When it's still cold out, like when we go ride our bikes outside, the neck gaiter is a really nice thing. So what's a neck gaiter? It's basically a stretchy scarf that's tube-shaped. It's a cylinder. Therefore, you can do about a million things with it. You can turn it into a cap. You can wear it just around your neck to keep your neck warm. So what I tend to do, if it's warmer out and I'm using the neck gaiter on my bicycle and I'm not near anybody, I'll have the neck gaiter down around my neck. And then when I get to an area where I see that I'm going to be passing people and trails, sometimes it's hard to keep that 6 foot distance, I'll pull the neck gaiter up. And then if it's cold out, I'll put the neck gaiter on around my neck, and then I'll put it over my head as well and fold it back so it stays. And then it covers my ears. It serves as a mini balaclava. And then again, when I get near somebody, I'll pull the neck piece up over my nose and mouth. And neck gaiters come in all kinds of colors and styles, and you know, they're really pretty. I have three that I've had for years because people just gave me them to wear on my bicycle because they are so practical. I have two in bright pink and one in a cheery blue, and I just ordered a bunch more in a whole bunch of colors. You can get packs of six and eight, and you can get just one in really fancy fabrics, and you can get them in different textures and different weights. So there'll be some that'll be a little bit happier for the summer. I had a question from Jean Sear. Big shout out to Jean Sear. She is really doing God's work. She's over at the Friends of Assisi Food Pantry, feeding people who really need food. And she has a wonderful crew over there that's taking care of people. And she asked me, I'm embarrassed. This might've been a couple of weeks ago already. Zinc is something that can be helpful. And if it's on board when you're exposed to viruses, it can be directly antiviral. It also is a great thing in general to support your immune system. It's one of the things we're recommending people take to help to protect you from the coronavirus. And also, if you get sick with it, it's something we would have you take. So you can certainly eat foods that have zinc in them. Nuts and seeds are going to have zinc in them, and animal protein. If you're not a vegetarian, you're going to get zinc from animal protein because we have zinc in us. So animal protein has zinc in it as well. But nuts and seeds are a great source of zinc. So, you know, pick your favorite nuts and seeds, just your common ones, walnuts and almonds and sunflower and pumpkin seeds. Really great. But Jean's question was, if I want to take a zinc supplement, what's one that won't give me a tummy ache? That's a problem because I find that I'll get queasy from taking zinc, and you have to experiment. If you just take a straight up zinc gluconate pill, it might give you a tummy ache. And one thing I get people to do, because the other problem people are having is that zinc has been hard to find because everybody's talking about how great zinc is and that it's helpful and that it's something that can be protective and preventative. So it's hard to find. So you might have to wind up buying whatever you can find. I'm finding lozenges that have elderberry and C in them. I like those. Usually they're okay, although for me, I'm a little sensitive to that sort of thing. So the zinc in the elderberry might give me a problem. And so what I recommend doing is, if you're having a hard time finding a zinc that really doesn't bother your stomach, take ginger with it. You can do ginger in whatever form you have. If you have ginger beer, ginger ale, you have ginger candy, those ginger chews. If you can chew on a piece of actual ginger root, if you've got some strong ginger tea around, get ginger in. If you want to take a spoonful of ginger powder with it, doesn't matter. Any form of ginger will be helpful. And I found that doing that, that'll short out the belly discomfort I might get from the zinc. Ginger, ginger, ginger. Ginger is also a great thing to take in the time of coronavirus because it is a cytokine calmer. And one of the nasty things about the coronavirus is that it can cause a cytokine storm. So if you have ginger around all the time, that's a really good thing. All right. So thank you. So the other thing about zinc is, if you have more of options, if you get to a health food store or you find something online that you can find, you might try finding a form of zinc that is food-based. So it's compounded with foods. I find that the food form, I can't say brands right now because this is public radio, so I'm not going to do that. But if you can find a brand that is food-based, the food-based zincs, even for me, and I tend to be sensitive to getting an upset tummy from zinc, the food-based ones seem to not bother my stomach. Sometimes if you get zinc in a food base that's in another product, so it's zinc compounded with a bunch of other things for another purpose, that won't bother, that might not bother your stomach as well. And the other thing is, when you take your zinc, make sure you have something in your stomach when you take it. So don't take it on an empty stomach because it'll tend to bother you a little bit less. But ginger is my friend in terms of that. So that's what to do. The other thing to be aware of is technically, if you take too much zinc, you can get a zinc and copper imbalance. And that zinc and copper balance all kinds of things. They balance various enzyme systems in your body. They are immune tonics. And if you take too much zinc, you can get a zinc copper imbalance. And so in order to prevent that, it's better if you can get zinc combined with copper. If you're taking a straight up zinc lozenge, if you're only doing it for a few days, it's not a big deal. But if you're taking zinc every day, you might want to make sure you're getting adequate copper. And in general, a good idea is to pair your 15 milligrams of zinc with 1 milligram of copper. If you're taking a zinc lozenge that has no copper in it, it's a good idea to find a copper supplement and take that along with it. Sometimes you can find products that have zinc and they're paired with a proper amount of copper for the amount of zinc that's in it. So that's a great thing to look for. So great question, Jean. Thank you for asking it. All right. So on to my next topic. So my next topic is perhaps you're curious, maybe you are, but I'm sitting here, so I have the floor, so I'm going to talk about it, which is what's my position on the whole pandemic to date? So how am I feeling? And, you know, everybody's feeling all sorts of ways. And I just want to put out there that however you're feeling, it's okay. If you're feeling happy, if you're doing great during the pandemic, if it's a great rest for you, that's okay. If you're feeling frustrated and angry, it's okay. If you're feeling scared because you don't have a lot of money or your business is going under, that's okay. If you are scared that you're going to get the virus and you don't know what's going to happen, that's okay too. Any way that you feel is absolutely fine. And I've probably said some version of this repeatedly, but it's still true. How you feel, whatever you're feeling is absolutely okay. And, you know, get whatever kind of support you need to make yourself feel better. And some days you want to curl up in a ball and spend the day just lying around. Yesterday was my lie around day. I really didn't accomplish very much at all yesterday. One of the things that I've been doing to cope is ride my bike a lot. So what did I do? I rode my bike into a sore knee. So now I have to manage my sore knee. And thank goodness I still have a chiropractor who will look after it. I have some guy taping me. And the other funny thing is I'm going to show you my tape. This is going to be a bit of a funny minute. So let me do this. I have to show you my tape. I don't know if I can get up to the camera. Here's my tape. See my tape? Is that not awesome? Yeah, it's falling off a little bit. But how cool is that tape? I happen to find that tape. It's pink with polka dots, but it is the extreme version. So it does last almost a week. So I've been keeping it on while I've been riding. I did rest my knee yesterday, and today, this morning, I got on the bike, the trainer, for an hour with about 60 of my closest friends from all over the world. Oh, look, it's Marley, Harry, and Tally on the screen behind us. And it's a UConn game. Very nice. So, and we saw Marley and Harry and Tally yesterday. It was very nice. So, I rode my knee into some soreness. So now I have to be nice to my knee. So I'm going to get chiropractic. I'm going to get some acupuncture, and I'm putting stuff on it, and I'm doing appropriate rest. And the ride today seems to have been helpful for it, I must say, because I rode fairly easy with the fearless ladies on Zwift, and a lot of them are British, so it was really nice to chat with them. Anyway, so my position is, like I said, I'm having a bunch of feelings about this, and maybe you resonate with some of this. So one of the things I'm feeling is I'm afraid for my friends, my loved ones, for myself, and everybody becoming gravely ill and dying. That is a fear of mine. And if you're afraid of that, normal to think things like that. I mean, I don't think that all the time, but I think, oh my God, what would happen if Ron died? That would be so horrible.
I'm not dying.
He says he's not going to die, so all right. No. And by the way, chances are you're not going to die. Okay. That, 80, whatever source you look at, 80 odd percent of people are either asymptomatic or have, very little disease. That still means you should be careful, but, it does mean It does mean that if you get sick with this, it's likely that you're going to survive it. That is the most likely outcome. It is a more rare outcome that you will even have to go to the hospital for this. Regardless of your age. We have relatives and friends who've been sick with this and they're okay now. Not saying that you should not be careful. You still should. And if you're still afraid, it's kind of a crapshoot who's going to get gravely ill. So you should still take care of yourself. Anyway, so the other thing I have is concern for my patients' well-being, COVID-related or not. I'm still taking care of patients. I see very few patients in office. We still are allowing patients to come into the office. I'm able to do that because I have a very large office. I'm able to physically distance. We wear masks and we're very careful. And cleaning. We have wipes and we have sprays and we're cleaning all the time. We're wiping off doorknobs, you know, all the places where the patients interact. And our patients are waiting outside before they come in. We have usually no more than one person in the waiting area. And we're doing cool things like, and again, people come in and buy supplements one person at a time. We curbside supplements, and Ron's been delivering supplements. So we've been doing a lot of things to make the office as safe as we possibly can. So I'm concerned about my patients, and I have patients who I have ordered the COVID antibody test for. So I can only at this point order the antibody test, and I have available IgG test, which is the one that you have been exposed to, that shows you that you've been exposed. And then I have a resource to order IgG and IgM. And that would tell you if you have current exposure as well as past exposure. And I am able to order those. And that's scary because my patients want to know if they have it or not. And then I have to get the results and then I have to call them and tell them. So far, not one person that I've tested has tested positive. It's interesting. So you're only at this point, we're still at a point where you're only going to get a nasal swab if you are symptomatic, and I'm not performing those. If somebody is symptomatic, I would put you in touch with the healthcare system that would screen you and then send you somewhere to get a nasal swab, and then you would get a drive-through nasal swab. So I'm very, that's something I think about. How are my patients doing? My patients are coming in. My patients are generally anxious, and they're anxious about this and they're anxious about other things, and they're having symptoms related to anxiety. So I'm having to talk to people and calm them and talk to them about what's going on for themselves. And so that can be stressful sometimes. I'm definitely concerned for them. And there are some things that have happened with patients that's very moving and very exciting, where we've been helpful and we've had some good, care for our patients. So that's nice. But that's a big concern for me. I'm concerned for all the various kinds of difficulties. Small difficulties, life-shaking difficulties related to the stay-at-home orders, ranging from depression at not being able to spend time with friends, to aggravating of actual mental illness, to intensifying of addiction, to more suffering with domestic abuse, to interruption of healthy habits like exercise and healthy eating, to loss of income and closing even of small businesses. All these are all things that I think about. And, you know, there are people who are depressed because they don't get to do the normal things they do for their self-care. They don't get to go to that cafe or that restaurant, or they don't get to go to the gym. And then there are those who judge those people for feeling bad about those things. Isn't it more important to stay alive? And so there's this harsh kind of judgment that's floating around. And that's something that's upsetting too, the kind of judgment that goes around. People are in various places with this. And the thing is, some people, the extent of their upset is that they can't live their normal everyday lives, that they're not in financial danger, And yet they're still not allowed to live their normal everyday lives. And it's upsetting to them. I think it's, you know, it's okay. It's okay to be upset about that. The people who are sick in the hospital and on ventilators would much rather be in your position. They're both valid positions to be in. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to feel bad about feeling bad that you can't go to the cafe. That's okay. All right. So wherever you're at, there's all kinds of levels of all kinds of things. Yeah. And I'm going to say something that's really funny right now. Ron's got a big series of, photos that's flashing before me one after the other. And there's my dad. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that I feel like my life is flashing before my eyes because it's all different people from all different things that are in your camera, that mm-hmm. are in your stores. And I'm seeing all these different people that I love and bicycles and events and things. And it's like my life is flashing before my eyes. Here's the rail trail with cinder blocks on it. Mm-hmm. and there's me holding up a poster of sexy women. Okay. Very interesting.
That was from the poster sale.
I know. When we used to do the poster sale. Right. There's the cyclocross race. Very nice. Okay. So I'm going to go back to this. So I'm concerned about everybody, about everything. If you have a concern, whether you're very afraid of catching the virus and that's keeping you up at night, or if you're upset because you're at home and you're trying to teach your kids and you're trying to work, that's okay. So I'm concerned about people for all of those things. All right. I'm also very concerned that our government doesn't appear to have an organized, overarching plan to help us through the pandemic and reopen the country, that we can't really, I can't really count on my government to be there for me, at least the federal government. I have more confidence in the regional government. Like I have more confidence in the mayors of the state of Connecticut and our senators and our congresspeople and our governor and the coalition of governors, you know, because we're part of a coalition, Maine, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts. Did I say Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania. And us, Connecticut, we're all part of this coalition, and and those governors are, you know, they're helping to figure out how to open up together. And when I hear them speak, they speak in full sentences and they're rational. Mm. And, you know, where I don't feel like our president is being a very good consoler in chief. Look, a double rainbow. That's also in Florida. The consoler in chief. He's not, but I think Ned functions well that way. In fact, the governors in our region, Maryland might be part of our general region as well. Those governors have been talking to each other, hanging out with each other, and, you know, making a plan for us to come together. And when they speak, I feel somewhat comforted. All right. So my general position overall is that, you know, there are people who are concerned about the epidemiology of this illness. And it's helpful and interesting. How is the virus going to spread? How can we protect ourselves? It's more, you know, the idea of how it should spread and how many people are in the hospital and how many people have died and how many people are sick and at what level they're sick. Those are useful bits of information to know. And they're not as much my focus as what do we do in a day-to-day way? What's our day-to-day? How can we function in a day-to-day way in terms of this pandemic? And my position is I need to know everyday practical things that I can do to protect myself and to protect my family so that I can give good advice to people who are listening. And myself as a naturopathic physician, I want to have good information. So I want to know what's out there. And there are people who are saying, well, I'm not going to listen to those two doctors from Bakersfield. And I'm not going to listen to Judy Mikovits, for example. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a conspiracy theory. And I don't know if what she says is true or not. And in as far as my day-to-day functioning, it doesn't matter that much. My day-to-day functioning is about making sure that you and I have masks, making sure that I'm doing appropriate physical distancing, and making sure that my patients are, and that I'm guiding people in appropriate physical distancing. And so, and that I also have information to help you and me and everyone to survive this, and to survive it in a healthful way, and to have some ideas of what to actually do if you do come down with the coronavirus. My life is still flashing before my eyes. It's really,
amazing,
boy. Okay. So that's where I am. So my focus is more on, you know, how should you clean? What's your exercise deal? How should you distance? What food should you be eating? Are there good supplements for you to take? How do you do general self-care? And in terms of research, that's what I'm the most interested. I'm more interested in the clinical side of things than I am in the epidemiological side of things. If there's something I need to know, like, you know what, we need to still be concerned in terms of how we should behave right now, in terms of we still have to stay home, we still have to physically distance. That information I need to know, but I need to know more about what do I do in a day-to-day way. And that's the kind of information that I'm trying to gather for myself, for my family, for my loved ones, and for anybody who's listening, and for my friend Stephanie, who's right there, all of a sudden. Okay. So anyway, so here's some new interesting information. Well, it's been out for a couple weeks, but I'm going to talk about it. So there's something that's protective against COVID-19. And I got it and Ron don't.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a girl.
I have two X chromosomes.
Yes,
yep. Yeah, so having two X chromosomes in general means better outcomes, that the people in the hospital, people who are hospitalized for COVID, tend to be a good 68 to 75% male. And so that means there's something that's protective about being female. So there was an article in the New York Times that talked about this. As the novel coronavirus swept through communities around the world, preying disproportionately on the poor and the vulnerable, one disadvantaged group has demonstrated a remarkable resistance, and that's us. Women, whether we're from China, Italy, or the U.S., doesn't matter, have been less likely to become acutely ill and far more likely to survive. And I know very specifically of a 93-year-old woman who has survived. Go, Grandma Sylvia.
Yeah, no
so,
kidding, huh?
So my Grandma Sylvia had the virus. And I say had, she survived it. She's 93 and she's in a nursing home. Can you even?
That's
I'm so grateful.
Really amazing, isn't it?
Yes. So it made doctors wonder, is it because of hormones that are produced in greater quantities by women? Is that what's going on? So there are scientists on both coasts acting quickly on the hunches. They're testing the hypothesis. There are two clinical trials that are going to dose men with sex hormones for limited durations. During the week of April 20th, doctors on Long Island in New York started treating COVID-19 patients with estrogen in an effort to increase their immune systems. And the following week, doctors in Los Angeles started treating male patients with progesterone, which has anti-inflammatory properties and can potentially prevent harmful overreactions of the immune system. And there's a striking difference between the number of men and women in the intensive care unit, and men are clearly doing worse. And this was noted by Dr. Sarah Gendelhari, a pulmonologist and intensive care physician at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, and she's the principal investigator for the progesterone study. She said 75% of the hospital's intensive care patients and those on ventilators are men. Big wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're not going anywhere ever again. Okay.
That's how that works.
All right. Pregnant women. What's the deal with pregnant women? Pregnant women have tons of progesterone. When you're pregnant, your placenta goes nuts making progesterone. Think about progesterone. Listen to the word progesterone. It's progestation. It helps to support pregnancy. So women make lots of it when they're pregnant, and pregnant women tend to have mild courses of the disease. This doesn't mean that all pregnant women have mild courses of the disease, because sometimes they don't, but that is something that is generally seen. So there's something about being a woman that's protective and something about pregnancy is protective. Then that's what Dr. Gandahari said. And there are some experts who study sex differences in immunity warn that hormones may not be the magic bullet, because even elderly women with COVID-19 are outliving their male peers. And there's a drastic reduction in hormone levels for women after menopause. I can attest to that. So the estrogen trial at the Renaissance School of Medicine at Stony Brook University in Long Island was from a similar organization. And Sharon Nachman, who's the trial's principal investigator, credited Stony Brook surgeon Dr. Antonio Gasparis with the idea. So that's something that they're looking at. They're looking at using hormones, like using progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone. This doesn't mean you should go out and get those things, but there is something that you can do that I'm going to tell you about that, like, I'm nervous about. Until the studies are really well proven, it's like, well, yeah, this is really a thing that that we see on this. I kind of would like to hold off on saying, yes, definitely everyone should go out and do natural hormone replacement therapy. Having said that, if you're already on it, it might be protective. Because this is just something we're seeing. So here is a nice article from the Journal of Pharmacology and Pharmacological Sciences. And the article is about prevention and therapy of COVID-19 via exogenous estrogen treatment for both male and female patients. And so this was a mouse study. In a mouse study, it's been shown that a weaker estrogen receptor signaling leads to increased morbidity and mortality in both males and females. In animal experiments, estrogen treatment silences the inflammatory reactions and decreases virus titers, leading to improved survival rate. It seems to be an ideal prevention and therapy against COVID-19. And so it was demonstrated in animal studies, and this article is suggesting that they could use Premarin, they could use conjugated estrogens to help. Again, so this is something, the thing is, on the one hand, we don't know enough about, have the studies really been proven that you can go ahead and use estrogen as a therapy? On the other hand, do we have time to wait if the potential benefit outweighs the risks, then maybe it should be done. My opinion would be, if you were going to try estrogen and progesterone, that you would do them together. You would not give only estrogen. I think it would be safer to give only progesterone, but because progesterone doesn't have a risk of reproductive cancer in the way that estrogen does. And in fact, if you give estrogen, we're talking natural estrogen, natural progesterone together, progesterone helps to balance the stimulatory effect of estrogen. And so you will tend to get a calming of the stimulatory effect if you take estrogen along with progesterone. So progesterone calms the immune. It's a moderator, whereas estrogen tends to be a proliferative hormone. But this is about signaling. It happens to be that there are sites on the on cells where the virus can dock, and estrogen and progesterone help to prevent those. So here's another study. This is from the Journal of Biomolecular Structural Dynamics. And I know, right? it says that natural products may interfere with SARS-CoV attachment to the host cell. And so this is interesting. So it talks about how SARS-CoV-2 has been emerged in December 2019 in China, causing about 5% mortality, pandemic pneumonia, and which they're calling COVID-19, and more than one host cell receptor is reported to be recognized by the viral spike protein. And among the proteins, so we've been talking about the ACE2 receptor. So this is one of the ones that bonds to is called heat shock protein A5 or HSPA5. And it has a couple other names too, GRP78 or BIP, and it depends on what system you're using to name it, but we'll call it the HSPA5. So on viral infection, HSPA5 is upregulated. then translocates to the cell membrane, which is subjected to be recognized by the SARS-CoV. So in other words, this heat check protein is intracellular, and it, when the virus comes around, it moves this heat check protein to the surface of the cell where the virus can more readily bond to it. And then the virus can do its spike protein deal and inject its RNA and then start reproducing viruses. So in this study, it was found that some natural product compounds are tested against the heat check protein substrate binding domain, which reported to be the recognition site for SARS-CoV spike. So molecular docking and molecular dynamics simulations are used to test some natural compounds binding to heat shock protein, the docking site for this heat shock protein. So they found that this heat shock protein has a high to moderate binding affinity for phytoestrogens, including diazide, genistein, fermentin, and biochainin A. I'm going to try to pronounce the names of all of these things, and then I'm going to tell you what foods they're in. Chlorogenic acid, linoleic acid, palmitic acid, caffeic acid phenylethyl ester, hydroxytyrosol, a favorite of mine, cis-p cumaric acid, cinnamaldehyde, thymoquinone, that's a good one, and some physiological hormones like estrogens, progesterone, testosterone, and get this, cholesterol. Cholesterol bonds to the heat shock protein docking site. So that means that cholesterol can be protective. Wait for it. Cholesterol can be protective against coronavirus, according to the study.
Cholesterol a terrible, horrible thing, according to all the docs?
Yes, no. So right. This would make me concerned about people who are on statins. So I'm wondering, if this heat shock protein, if cholesterol bonds, the thing is, if you're on a statin and you need to be on a statin because you have cardiovascular disease, one way to handle that would be, don't worry about it. Keep taking your statin and then eat some of these other things, because I'm going to tell you some things you could eat. So again, this, I can't say that this is going to protect you from the coronavirus. There's nothing I can say that can tell you absolutely, whatever I tell you, it's going to absolutely protect you from the coronavirus, because there's nobody can say anything like that. But according to this study, all I can say for sure is that this study shows that there's a number of natural compounds that bond to the same site that the coronavirus docks at. Yeah. So there are foods that can be helpful for fighting coronavirus, as we said, because they tend to bond to this heat shock protein site. The heat shock protein, I'm going to repeat it one more time. The heat shock protein is a site that's inside of cells that can translocate the virus presents to it. The virus causes it to translocate to the outside of the cell so that the virus can attach to this heat shock protein and inject its RNA so that it can begin viral replication. And there are numerous compounds that compete for bonding with the heat shock protein site, docking site. So if you have those around, there less virus is going to be able to bond. That's the idea. And they're healthy foods. So here's what the healthy foods are. For example, foods that are high in chlorogenic acid, apples, pears, carrots, tomatoes, sweet potatoes, things you should be eating anyway. Also, of course, its chlorogenic acid is high in coffee and tea. So if you're a coffee or tea drinker, have at it. If you get headaches and don't do well with caffeine, then watch your coffee and tea. And you don't have to have it because the chlorogenic acid is in other things that you can eat. High phytoestrogen foods. So remember, I was trying to pronounce diazide, genistein, fermentin, and biochainin A. So flax seeds are the highest in those phytoestrogens, followed by soybeans. So if you have food intolerances, obviously any of the things I'm telling you, if you have a problem eating any of them, don't eat the things that make you feel bad. Obviously, don't eat soybeans if they give you horrific gas just because they have phytoestrogens. That doesn't make any sense. Because if you upset your digestive system, you're not going to feel well and you're not going to do as well. You're not going to absorb any nutrients as well. So only eat foods that make you feel good. That should be obvious, but I feel like I have to say it. So not only that, if you eat too much sugar, that's not good for you either, because it suppresses your immune system. Anyway, so ground flax seeds can be a great thing. They have phytoestrogens in it that can be helpful. If you can eat soybeans, you can eat edamame. Red clover extract, you can drink red clover tea, and you can also get supplements that have red clover supplements or tinctures. Red clover, it's a legume, so it's going to have a lot of phytoestrogen in it. You can also eat soy products if they don't bother you. Tofu, tempeh, soy beverages. You can also have actual ground flax seeds. Sesame seeds have phytoestrogens in them. If you are not intolerant to wheat, wheat berries and, wheat bran have the phytoestrogens you're looking for in them. Oats, barley, any dried bean at all, lentils, rice, alfalfa, mung beans, apples, carrots, rice bran, and soy linseed bread. Bread that happens to have soybean in it and also flax seeds in it. All right. Linoleic acid helps to protect against that docking site. And linoleic acid is very hard, very high, or linolenic acid, I should say, very high in flaxseed oil. So you take the flaxseed oil for the linolenic acid, and then you take ground flaxseeds for the lignans. So both of those, again, will attach to that docking site, that heat shock protein docking site. Then palmitic acid is in butter, cheese, milk, and beef. Now, if you're a vegetarian, obviously you're not going to be getting palmitic acid. And if you need to avoid dairy, that's okay too. You can eat some of the other things, but if you're not, then if you do some grass-fed beef and grass and dairy that comes from grass-fed animals, you're going to get some palmitic acid. And that's going to be helpful too. Hydroxytyrosol, I said that was one of my faves. It's in olives and olive oil, and you can also take olive leaf extract. And olive leaf extract is helpful because it's shown to be antiviral. Then there's cumaric acid, and yes, there's probably some relationship to the drug Coumadin. Cumaric acid is going to be, that's another thing that's found in red clover, and it is going to work as a blood thinner as well as helping, it's going to dock at that site and help to protect you from coronavirus bonding. So cumaric acid is high in fungi. So eat your mushrooms. If you eat mushrooms, it's a good idea to cook them. If you eat raw mushrooms, have some toxins in them, so it's better to eat them cooked. All right, peanuts and peanut butter. If you eat peanuts, make sure they're organic so they don't have pesticides on them. It's better in general if they're from the Southwest because then they'll be less likely to have mold. But you can also check your peanut butter. If you get organic peanut butter from the health food store, just make sure it's aflatoxin free. Navy beans specifically have cumaric acid in them. Tomatoes and carrots. We keep seeing tomatoes and carrots. Tomatoes and carrots have a lot of stuff in them that are good for you. So if you're a carrot fan, you're in good shape.
We eat them every day.
Yeah, basil and garlic. It's time to go make some pesto. So pesto has cumaric acid in it. Cumaric acid is also in wine and also vinegar. So if you like to put some vinegar on your salad, that's helpful too. Cinnamaldehyde. Too much cinnamaldehyde is not good for you. But that's why I say don't look for it as a separate ingredient in foods. But it is in cinnamon, and cinnamon is generally good for you. Cinnamon helps to regulate your blood sugar and helps you with digestion and a variety of other things. So just use cinnamon liberally. Use cinnamon in anything it's going to taste good on. Then there's thymoquinone. Thymoquinone is this neat compound. It's in black cumin seed oil or black seed oil, Nigella sativa. So this is a time to be getting into some black seed oil because black seed oil is generally antimicrobial, but the thymoquinone in it, one of its mechanisms is that it bonds to that heat shock protein. So it can help to it can help to compete for bonding with from the coronavirus. So that's exciting. And again, natural hormone therapy. If you need natural hormone therapy, that might be something that's useful. Should you just take it anyway? I'm not sure if that's a good idea. If you have any history of reproductive cancer, I probably wouldn't go there. But if you are already healthfully taking natural hormone therapy, natural hormone therapy is thought to be protective. So there you go. So just eating healthfully in general is going to be helpful. Eating as much in the way of vegetables and fruit, nuts and seeds, if you can tolerate them. Clean animal protein, if you can tolerate them. If you're a vegetarian, if you want to eat some soy, if you feel well while you eat soy, soy is actually helpful. And soy, so when you eat soy, now I'm one of those people that I do well with soy. I don't get excessive gas from it. I digest it well. And I enjoy tempeh. Tempeh is a really nice way to eat soy. It's very satisfying. It's, you know, it's almost, it's got that nice mouthfeel that it's almost meaty. And you can take tempeh and do neat things with it. You can marinate tempeh in soy sauce and maple syrup and garlic. And you can saute it as well. And you can take a hunk of it, you can take a square of it, that's about the size of a patty, and you can make Reubens with it if you want to, or you can make, you know, sandwiches with it. You can also chop it up and put it into stir fries, and you can also eat it as a snack. You can bake it and eat it as a snack. That's another thing you can do with it. I find tempeh to be very versatile. That's one of the things about the soy products. Soy is very mildly flavored, so you can flavor it with whatever you want. If you want to do vegetarian saag paneer, it's not really saag paneer. It would be saag. I don't know how to say soy in Hindi. Yeah. So, So anyway, you could make saag tofu. Anyway, so it will take on the flavor of the very spicy spinach that you just made. It's a really nice way to go. So there's a lot of things you can do with soy. You can also get edamame pods, and you can steam the edamame pods. They often taste nice with a little cayenne pepper and salt on them. And you can also get toasted edamame and just eat them like a nut. They sell toasted edamame. You can get them anywhere. And you can get them... you can get them at the grocery store. They come in bulk at health food stores. So edamame can be really helpful. Yeah, that's how you say it in Hindi?
Mm-hmm.
Soya? Oh, yeah. All right. Soya. So it's not really translated. So they use the English word for it. Well, because, because in India they were under British rule for many years, so there are some words that are cognates that they just they got into the Hindi language intact. So anyway, so you can use tofu and make saag tofu, saag soya, I suppose. All right, so and then natural hormone therapy. So those are some very simple things that you can do to help you, that some good foods that you can eat, and some things that you can that are just, you know, really nice, helpful foods in general. Just eating a healthy diet in general is going to be helpful for protecting you from the coronavirus because of all the various nutrients that are found in them. Going to your farmer's market and getting really high quality, fruits and vegetables that have been grown with a lot of care to the nutrients that are in them. Is going to be really helpful for you. Again, I have to say again, nothing I say has been absolutely shown to protect you against the coronavirus. What we know in general is that if you are female, you are more likely to do well than if you are male, that's been observed and studied, and that there seems to be some protective effect of reproductive hormones, but don't necessarily run out and get them. Because these studies are preliminary, and these studies on the foods that I'm talking about, this is not something that has been observed in humans. It's something that makes sense because we see that the compounds in these foods
bond to the same site that the virus does. And so when you have a lot of competing compounds, then not everybody's going to get to bond. And certainly the virus is not going to be as able to bond just because there's not going to be as much room for them. There's not going to be as many places for them to bond. So it makes sense. And in any way, it makes sense to eat healthy food. If you eat healthy food, you're going to tend to do better because it's going to help your immune system in every way. All right. So let's see. We have a few minutes left. Let's talk about a fun thing.
A fun thing? What you got?
Yeah. It's a fun thing that doesn't have particularly to do with the coronavirus.
I have one of those coming up on my show.
Okay. So the fun thing that I'm going to talk about is carbonated water good for you?
Yeah. And before the computer crashed, I had that all pulled up on your site. And
everything. Oh, did you read it?
I didn't get a chance to, no. Okay. Because that right shortly after that, we lost everything. But
so not everybody likes fizzy. I do.
No, I know you do.
But not everybody does. But that's because I'm probably a homeopathic phosphorus.
Right.
Yeah.
What's that mean? What does it mean to be a homeopathic?
It means that one of the ways you can judge homeopathic remedies is you study a person archetypally and you learn about all the things about their bodies, what they tend to do, what their preferences are, look, it's Zach graduating from law school, what they're tending to do, what their tendencies are, what their preferences are, what makes them feel better, what makes them feel worse. And so people who have a constitutional remedy, so you can come up with a constitutional homeopathic remedy that tends to cover a lot of the tendencies that they have in their bodies. And some people really love fizzy things and some people don't. Some people don't care about them. Some people dislike fizzy. I'm a person that really likes fizzy. And one of the interesting things, and this is something you noticed, that I tend to have a hard time drinking plain water, that if there's something in the water, I'm more likely to drink it. And, you know, if I'm very thirsty, I can drink plain water. I like it and I enjoy it, but it's harder for me to drink. And there's, you know, a general condition of dampness that makes it harder for you to just pound straight up water. And there have been studies that show that when you put carbohydrate in water or even something that tastes like carbohydrate in water, people are more likely to drink it. And that's why you have sport beverages, because people are more likely to throw those down than they are to throw down plain water. Wow. And then you get into the issue of when you're working out. If you're sweating a lot, you're sweating out electrolytes. So you're both replacing your electrolytes, and the electrolytes help you to absorb the water faster. Salt and sugar will help you to absorb water faster than if the salt and sugar were not present. That's why Gatorade exists.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you put a little carbohydrate and salt in a sport beverage, it's going to get absorbed by your cells faster.
Right.
So if you then make them fizzy when you're, fizzy when you're actually on your bike. I found that, you know, I'll do a rest stop and I'll get some seltzer water or some soda. And then if I had too much of it, the fizzy doesn't taste good. It doesn't feel good when you're actually, you know, putting out an effort. It's refreshing while you're at the rest stop, but in your water bottle, not so much. But anyway, you know, a lot of people like to drink fizzy as opposed to flat water. And is that good for you? And I'm somebody who probably drinks some kind of fizzy beverage most days. And, you know, I try to, once in a while, I will crave a Coca-Cola or something, but I try not to have that frequently because of the sugar and the phosphoric acid. And most days I have, you know, zero calorie fizzy beverages. I'll have flavored seltzer, or I'll have seltzer that has a tiny bit of fruit juice in it, you know. So and a lot of people find it refreshing, and some people are concerned that it may be bad for your health. And so is this true or not? So carbonated water is basically water that's been infused with carbon dioxide under pressure. And it can be called sparkling water, soda water, seltzer, and fizzy water. And there's also club soda.
Right.
Apart from seltzer water, carbonated waters sometimes will have salt added to them to improve the taste. And sometimes small amounts of other minerals are added. Seltzer water generally does not have any minerals added to it. So there are mineral waters that are naturally sparkling, So Perrier and San Pellegrino actually, they come out of the earth that way. They're captured from a mineral spring and tend to contain minerals and sulfur compounds, and they're usually carbonated as well. Tonic water is a form of carbonated water that contains quinine, and then because quinine is wicked bitter, they put sugar or high fructose corn syrup in it. It is acidic, so the way that you get the fizzy into the water is you put carbon dioxide and water together, that and they make carbonic acid, and it's a weak acid, and it stimulates the same nerve receptors in your mouth as mustard. Who knew that? So it's almost like eating something spicy, specifically mustard, and I like mustard. So it triggers a burning, prickly sensation that can be both irritating and enjoyable. So that's one of those situations where some people are going to find that pleasurable and some people are not. And I apparently like that.
So what's with quinine water?
Quinine, all quinine is,
it's a common treatment for malaria, right?
Yeah, quinine is a, yes, and that's the basis of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. Quinine is a natural compound that's extracted from plants, and they mix it. So when you get quinine water at the store, though, you're getting, there's going to be quinine in the water, and it's going to be carbonated. It's probably exogenously carbonated, and then it's going to be sweetened because you don't want to take plain quinine because wicked bitter, you know. Okay. And then you can have your gin and tonic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's or you can just drink it straight. With liquor and stuff like that.
And if you're thinking you're going to kill the coronavirus by drinking quinine water, you're probably not. However, if you have leg cramps, if you get a lot of leg cramps, that can be one of the things you can try because it can be helpful for that. Anyway, so when you buy quinine water at the store, it's going to be, you know, water, carbonation, quinine, and some kind of sweetener.
Mm.
Yeah, and you can get some that with natural sweeteners. So the carbonated water is not going to make your body more acidic. It's a weak acid, and your kidney and lungs are going to remove the excess carbon dioxide, and your blood is going to remain at the slightly alkaline pH of 7.35, 7.45, no matter what you eat or drink. The concern is that it can affect your dental health. There's very little research on the topic, but one study found that sparkling mineral damaged enamel only slightly more than still water. Further, mineral water was 100 times less damaging than a sugary soft drink. So what damages your teeth that's fizzy is going to be sugar plus carbonic acid, or even worse, sugar plus phosphoric acid plus carbonic acid. So that's what you're going to get in soda, but you know, in a sweetened soda. If you drink just fizzy water that has no sugar in it, then it's not going to be an issue. And then if you do things to remineralize your teeth, you'll be fine. So another study placed samples of tooth enamel in various beverages up to 24 hours. The sugar-sweetened carbonated and non-carbonated beverages resulted in significantly greater enamel loss than their diet counterparts. So it's the sugar. It's the sugar and the phosphoric acid that bother your teeth, not the carbonation.
Okay.
So if you're concerned about dental health, you can try drinking sparkling water or rinsing your mouth with plain after drinking it if you're worried about it.
Right.
It can benefit your digestive health. It can improve your swallowing ability. Another study showed that the combination of cold temperature and carbonation strengthen the beneficial effects. And it may increase your feeling of fullness, so you might eat less, and it can also help you with constipation. So if it doesn't bother, and it's not known to bother your bone health either. Again, phosphoric acid is the thing that bothers bone health.
And leg cramps.
Yes, yeah. That's right. So if you want to do carbonated water, it's probably not a bad thing. So I'm going to go now. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.